Okay, hi, Dumpster Divas. We are back with another episode of Dumpster Dive with me, Tom Hamlet, and my sister Kix. Hi, Kix.
Hi.
Happy whatever day it is you're listening to this podcast episode.
Yeah. I was trying to think about
it. It'll come on a little bit. We're trying to backlog some things. But we are continuing our holiday coverage, and we are finally entering into the Berkshires. So I know we did a Halloween episode of the Berkshires a couple weeks ago, but from now until the end of the year, we are literally every Monday talking about a Berkshires trip, which I like feeling like really emotional because I miss Dorinda and really happy and excited. And also kind of angry at myself and us for scheduling this, because what are we going to do next year? Because
we're just want to do the Berkshires again. I mean, that's a next year problem. But I mean, yeah, next year is in a month. December is next week. So
yeah, I know. But next holiday season. I mean, we're really setting a high bar for us. But we are going to go ahead and bring out our guest. We are joined today by Mike Kelton. You can follow him at Mike Kelton on IG. He's a comedian, a producer of Logo Live, as well as TLC's Dragnificent. So check out all of those things. And if you want to go back a little bit, go listen to Beyond. I used to listen to Beyond and really, really loved it. Mike's podcast about spirituality and about ghosts and all the things, which I have some ghost stories that I feel like we need to unpack with him. But Mike, hi, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me, you two. I love this familial energy that's going on right now.
You do look like you could be related to us.
Yeah.
100%. I'm your older cousin, I guess.
Yeah, I think there's a little more red tinted to your hair, but I think the faces are pretty. If I grab my glasses, I feel like we Kix, because Kix and I famously both went to Warby Parker different times in our lives.
Like 4 years apart. I've had my glasses for like four fucking years.
But I got the same pair of glasses that she has.
I have a lesson I've learned recently.
Okay, what?
This is maybe like a bougie lesson, but
God, what?
always got Warby's my whole life. Mm-hmm. And then I switched over and I got, I have this great company. I have this great company. I realized, like, you know, when you're talking and you realize you're like saying brands, and if you've ever done a sponsorship with a brand, you're like, as they come out of your mouth, you're like, okay, this is happening. Anyway, here we are. So my good friend started an eyeglass company, Zach Eyes, that like has amazing glasses, and I have glasses from them. And I've never spent more than $200 on glasses, because I feel like it's crazy.
Right.
And then most recently, I got these glasses from Muscote. Oh, Jesus Christ. I mean, I'm off the rails instantly, and this is horrible.
No, but okay, question. Is it, I always call it like Muscot. Like, but what is it?
Oh, they have the fun looking stores.
Muscot? Is it like escargot?
Muscot. It might be Muscot. Maybe okay. It's Muscot.
You know, there's someone screaming into the void right now listening to this. They're like, it's Muscot.
Yeah. I mean, maybe. So anyway, so I spent truly, and this is very much my $25,000 moment, but like, I think they were like $400. And I was like, wow, this is crazy to spend this much money, but I love them so much. And they're so thick, and they haven't, you know how like Warby glasses will like kind
break.
Of, you know, 6 months in, you're like, why are my glasses foggy all the time? They're just like eternally foggy.
Yeah, like, you're like bleeding onto your skin.
Mine are crooked. Exactly. Mine are like literally sit on my face, like at an angle. And I just like adjust them when I watch TV. They like uncrooked. It's very bad.
And they just will be like that thing is like, they just will be like that. And you're like, these are my glasses now. Anyway, these, I feel like I could run them over and they would be like, ooh, cute vintage glasses.
they are really cute.
Yes.
One thing I just have to say though, is I'm really bad about like accessories and like keeping track of them. So like, it's hard for me to trust myself to invest in, like, for instance, sunglasses. That's a month commitment for me, because I promise you, a month after purchase, they're RIP somewhere at like
on the beach.
Gym locker. They're on a beach. Yeah. So it's hard for me to want to invest so much in glasses, but I do keep my Warby's in their nice little case though. So I mean, maybe I could. I'm growing up, you know.
Yeah, maybe you figured it out. Maybe that's nice.
Figure it out.
We're learning.
Kix, you gave me jewelry for Christmas last year, and I still have it intact.
Yeah, so I'm sweating thinking about me working for fine jewelry and you losing the things I would buy you.
I have a spot for it in my room, and I haven't lost it. Well, Mike, thank you so much for being here. We're so excited to have you. Wait, so can we talk ghosts for a minute?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I mean, I literally, we couldn't not.
Okay, so we have, I just want to be clear. We have a lot to talk about on Bravo. But before we even touch that, we have to just talk at you about our crazy ghost experiences.
Please, this is like literally my favorite thing in the world. Great. The only thing we're missing is like wine right now, but I'm obsessed.
That's a really easy fix.
If you yeah, yeah, same. My bar, I'm looking at my bar card.
Go ahead. You want to tell it?
Yeah, sure. So our like childhood home, our parents still live there. Our aunt used to live there with us and she moved to New York City.
She's you mean like my mom?
Yes, your mother, Mike.
Because we're cousins.
Yeah, your mom. Sadly, but the twist of this whole story is our aunt was adopted and she I say was because she passed away. She was black. So she actually could not have been
she's
your
like
mother.
She's like 6'5" and like... like this
and in a way
woman.
That would be my mom.
So she passed away like a couple year no not a couple years like 10 years after she moved to New York City. 10
like 10 a little over 10 years yeah. ago. That's not the point of the story, but
no, it is, we're getting there, but sure, long okay. story short, she lived with, she like grew like helped raise Tom and I because our parents were working a lot, and so she lived with us like full time as like a live-in like family member, and she had her own like area of the house and all these things.
Yeah.
So when she passed away, I feel like it took a little bit for her to start haunting our house, but she started playing pranks on the room that I slept in, because like she would always like play pranks on me when I was a kid. And so everything, all this creepy stuff started happening in this one room. And I had moved rooms after Tom had went to college. So I wasn't really in that room anymore. But everything, all of this crazy shit started happening in there.
Like what?
So like every time someone would house sit, like while mom and dad were away and Kix was gone or something, and take care of the dog and the cat, they would always stay in that room. And like one time,
because it was a guest room, it was yeah.
The alarm clock went off and it was not plugged in.
The second night they stayed there.
One time they were downstairs and the shower turned on upstairs.
Faucets.
Closet doors opening, closing. There was one time downstairs in the office where tape from a tape dispenser, like at an office desk, had been pulled and was, it was.
Because our parents are accountants,
into the,
so they have
into
like
the, foyer.
The printer stuff. That like for an old school printer calculator. Oh, and one
was
time
your
furniture.
Aunt a craft queen? Was she like an Etsy bitch?
No, not at all. She, kind of the opposite.
She was like butch lesbian who lived with her partner in Queens. Would, like,
so my mom.
Yeah, she would like kill spiders and like we would find scorpions.
Kill spiders? What a bizarre.
I'm just saying she was just like
what are you talking about.
She would like kill all these shit around our house, like snakes,
the
spiders.
The idea that like one of the things you would say about your aunt is that she killed spiders.
No, that's what I'm laughing about. Ridiculous. It's bizarre. Gigs like that. Of all the things I remember her by, I'm like, God rest her soul. Without her, what will we do with all these
like,
spiders?
My aunt, she loved to cook. She loved to go to the beach. She killed spiders. It's
like... I can't with you sometimes.
She was a spider killer.
And you forge ahead as if what you said wasn't the most.
Well, because I said it and then I was like, that's so stupid. So I tried to recover.
Okay, so two big stories that like go down in history. One time we had someone staying at the house who went, the dogs were barking downstairs, went downstairs, let the dogs out, did a loop around the house, like to see, because they were barking as if someone was there. You could just like tell there was like war. They weren't big barkers. Like they would just bark like if they heard the doorbell ring or things like that.
And they know.
Absolutely.
Dogs know.
They
dogs
like, literally
know
stare at shit. Like,
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So dog sitter does a loop around the house on the first floor. I can't with you. Walks into the kitchen. Everything's normal in the kitchen. Walks in the living room and then goes back into the kitchen. And at the dinette, that one of the chairs from the dinette, like that sits, like not our dining room, just like the little table in the kitchen, one of the chairs was sitting in the middle of the kitchen. So like they had done a loop and somehow the chair had moved. And then, wait, okay, the craziest story of all time. What?
Wait, I thought you were going to talk about the fire alarm. Was that the same weekend? Also, a fire alarm went off the second night and it started like the fire firemen. This is literally water. Firemen, they said it started in that house, room.
Yeah. Yes. So then, not to make it all about me, but I did have the most insane thing happen at the house, and Kix makes fun of me and friends make fun of me because I don't get scared by things like very easily. I'm very open to it, like all of it. And so I woke up in the middle of the night. I was visiting home from college and I was staying in the room where it happened, where it all happens. And I sit up in bed at like 3 or 4 in the morning, and which I've read is like the like time.
Yeah,
I've read that 4 a.m. is the like witching hour.
The witching hour. Yep. Yeah. 100%.
So I like sit up in bed. And I'm kind of like lucid. I feel like I'm lucid dreaming. Like I feel like I'm controlling my body, but like I can't believe what is happening if it's real.
Also, as you're talking, by the way, your candle's going fucking crazy.
It is. It just stopped.
But as you're telling the story, it's literally like freaking out.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. So, hey, girl. So I look to my left and there is a six drawer long ways dresser. Every single drawer is pulled all the way out, like completely, like to the max. And I look at it and I'm like, well, that's weird. Like I'm like, and I think I'm dreaming almost. So I'm like, that can't be real. So I'm just gonna like lay back down and just like move on. Like I like just wasn't totally like understanding why that was happening. Second I lay down, every single drawer slams shut.
What the fuck?
So
what the fuck? This is so crazy.
There's a twist.
And there's a siren now coming to get me for telling the story. The shocking part of the story, I go back to sleep. I couldn't like understand. I think in my brain I was like, this is just a bad dream. So like maybe if I just go to sleep, change my dream, it'll get better. Mm-hmm. So the next morning I wake up and I get up at like 6:30-ish and I'm like, I very rarely remember my dreams. And I was like, I really remember this. Like it feels very real. And so I go downstairs and at the same time I go downstairs, my mom walks in to the kitchen and she is like white in the face. And I'm like, are you okay? And she's like, I don't know. And she was like, are you okay? And I was like, I don't know. I was like, last night, I think something happened. Like, I think Aunt Sue was here. And I was like, I sat up, I told her everything that happened and the door slammed shut. And I was like, but I went back to sleep, which I know sounds crazy, but I think I thought it was not real. And she's like, Tom, I woke up at 4 a.m. to a slamming noise in the house and I wasn't able to go to sleep.
Oh my God.
It gets better.
No, and she goes, there's more.
And she goes, and the weirdest part is I went for a walk because I couldn't go to sleep. And I just saw Aunt Sue standing in the yard when I got
there. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Horrifying.
I wish that I like fabricated some part of it. I did not. That is exactly what happened.
And while while we were all like having a nice time for the most part with it all, because it was happening to like the poor house sitters that were staying there, this kind of like was the last straw. My mom got so pissed, and so she did like essentially a seance, and like she was just like, you gotta like, I need to rest.
Did it work?
Yeah
There will be things every once in a while. Every once in a while, there'd be a weird thing that happens.
Sometimes used to hear laughing, like when Tom and I weren't there, when we were like out of the house, which is weird.
So what would Sue's unfinished business be? Because like, or what was the message she was trying to send? And was it about spiders?
Well, I had finally stopped giggling in private about that.
Well, not to get emotional of all this, but like, there's a lot of unfinished business with her and like life, I feel, because she left really early. She didn't really get to say goodbye to a lot of people. Like she, and also I think she carried such joy in her heart that I think that leaving on a sour note, she died very suddenly of leukemia, like very, very suddenly.
Yeah, it happened super quick.
Like got diagnosed and was gone like 4 months later. And so like, I think that there, part of me thinks that there's just some sort of like unfinished, like jokes that need to be made. And like, and I think that there's some missing, like missing out, you know, like that sort of stuff. So I feel like that's, I feel like that's a lot of it, because she didn't really get to say goodbye to anyone, like except our mom and our grandmother, because they were like the ones there at her bedside. But like, because of how fast everything went, there wasn't really a like Aunt Sue is sick, like it just kind of happened. So part of me thinks that like that's a little bit of it. I'm actually surprised that nothing's happened since we moved to New York City, honestly.
I mean, I'm going to say that and something's going to happen tonight. But no, nothing has happened to me since I've been here. But it's like also...
But not even like in our apartments, just like things in the ether, you know? I don't know. And maybe, and that doesn't mean that there isn't going to be something, but also maybe she's finally, you know, at peace, so.
That would be nice. But I feel like part of it is with all the stories I've heard but from doing Beyond about people that have passed and hauntings, a large part of it is... wanting to be recognized, right? Wanting to be like, to have an impact, right? And so the more you talk about her, the more you tell these stories, talk about how she hated spiders, like that is her essence. And like, I can even feel kind of her joy in just you talking about her, you being like, hey girl, like joking of like how she would like to be referred to. And so I think that's like, that's a big part of it too. That's one of the biggest takeaways I've had from Beyond, is when people have these experiences, the message in it is like, keep that person alive and keep that energy as like a through line in your life, and have those moments when you're like, oh, this is, what's her name?
Aunt Sue.
Suzanne. We call her Aunt Sue. Suzanne.
Aunt Sue. So
but yeah, I think it's also the goes the other way too. I think in subconsciously there is a longing, of course, of like wanting connection with someone that has passed, and always wanting that connection. So like our mom always says that like when you have dreams about people that have passed, that's them like popping in to say hello. So it's just like, you know, there's things that you can like connect with. But I mean, these hauntings were legit. And I don't even know if we want to say hauntings, because they were very, at the time, they were like very fun and silly, but.
I mean, sort of. I mean, they're fun to look back on, but some of them were
kind of fucking scary.
Yeah. But there hasn't been, we say there hasn't been anything since. We're going home for Christmas for the first time. Mom and Dad have come to the city since we lived here. So for the holidays. So this is our first time going home for Christmas in a really long time. Just, I'm like,
stay tuned.
I'm like, yeah, maybe something's up when we go home. Although that room is turning into a gym.
Yeah, it's a gym now.
Okay, I mean, so in a weird way,
so no one's gonna be sleeping there.
That's the most dangerous place for like things to go.
No, not like, think about it. No, you're absolutely right. Like the treadmill goes from like 5 miles an hour to like 12 in 2 seconds, or a weight falls on someone. Yeah, great. Mom, be careful when you're in there.
Be careful. So your parents are both CPAs?
Yes.
Oh my God, that's so funny. And I also like, my accountant is actually like so funny, but I don't think of CPAs as like the most like vibrant and funny people. And this is no shade to your parents. I just don't think of that profession.
No, it's like cliche for them to not be.
They're definitely one in a million. Yeah, in terms
and it's funny because the two of you are so gregarious and fun and lively that I'm like, oh, what a fun family. Like, these two CPAs with these two fun kids and these like these fun Aunt Sue, like almost like I'm like, it's a CW show.
Truly.
Like,
I mean, we always joke about that. Like, we could have had a TV show about our lives, because we're truly insane people.
I love it. Honestly, my favorite kind of people, kind of like the Housewives.
Yeah, speaking of insane.
You teed us up. That was great, Mike.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for letting us chat about that. I had a feeling that you would find all of that very, very interesting.
I love it so much. Yeah. And I'm always here for any of the stories. We can always stop recording and keep talking. So
oh my God, I wish I had more. I just like don't we like I haven't had anything else happen.
Mm-mm, no.
Well, before we jump into the Berkshires, briefly, I just want to check in about your journey with reality television. And we like to ask our guests what reality show, what reality personality made you a quote unquote dumpster diva that really put your trash taste on the forefront. So take it away, Mike.
It's a really good question. So I feel like I was raised by American Idol, which I wouldn't like, I don't think that's like trash, trash, but like there are certain characters from my youth that I remember, like Scooter Girl from I think season one of American Idol. Sure. She auditioned, she had the scooter. And I just remember being like obsessed with the weirdos. I was like, those people are my favorite. I want Scooter Girl in the finale. Like I love them. And so then when shows like, you know, Flavor of Love and things like that came about, I was like all in on almost like lovingly the freaks, right? Yeah, I love the freaks. I always support like the loudest one as probably like it's hard with like in cancel culture because you're like, oh, you can't actually like those people. They're actually like really bad, right. Horrible people. And I'm like, right. I'm like, but also really fun. So I feel like Flavor of Love, I'm trying to think of other examples that really got me into being a dumpster diva.
Well, I love the answer though about like Scooter Girl, because like American Idol was like appointment television for our family. Like we were obsessed.
We recorded and, like, it on VHS, yeah. And then when the next week we would record over the two that we recorded. Like it was like because we had busy lives, we were always like we couldn't watch it live, it had must have been recorded or else
always. And so, I like have such fond memories of like of us all just sobbing, laughing at those awful auditions. Mm-hmm. Like that, what's that woman who sang the like make the earth move under? She sang, her name was Mary, I think. Something
Mary Roach.
Or, yep, that was it.
Mary Roach. And yep, she that was saying, exactly I feel it. Let the earth move under my feet. They're tumbling down. Tumbling down. I love her. I love her so much.
Where is Mary Roach's show?
What is she doing now?
She would have $1 million if TikTok was a thing.
Oh my God, TikTok.
Queer
would,
icon.
Yeah.
Because truly queer icon.
I do feel like the people, Tom, that we liked in American Idol really like sculpted what we like, the people we like now in reality TV. Because I like the ones that are like normal, calm, like pretty much like, I don't know, level headed. And I feel like, Tom, you like the crazies.
I love chaos, always.
Love chaos.
Bring on the chaos.
I find it so charming. I think there's a part of this like young queer kid in me that always felt like really crazy in middle school. Like I always like felt like, you know, sometimes unsafe, sometimes like this life of the party. It was like a very chaotic time for a bunch of like queer kids. So I really related to that chaos energy and was like, I see you. I love it. I know there's probably something deep underneath that makes you like this. And I support you 100%, even though it's like really kind of too much, you know?
Oh, and they were so awful to them.
They're
too.
They're so like, mean.
The producers were just awful. And like, what's the guy's name who became famous? Who had
She Bangs, She
song.
Bangs.
She
that?
Bangs, yeah. What's his name? Why am I forgetting it? Well,
I'll look
regardless, up. They just like the way like they, granted he made money, so like he was able to monetize on being crazy, but like not crazy about being a bad singer, but like it's sort of like, yeah, but looking back, it's like awful.
William Hung.
Everyone Thank was you. Just laughing at him. Like, and I don't know that he was ever so in on the joke.
I mean, that is what reality TV is though, right? Like it's, you want to find, this is coming from a producer in reality, right?
Right.
Most shows, not all, most American reality is finding people that are not in on the joke. So you're telling an audience, hey, you're smarter than this nut job. Watch them go into situations thinking they know what's going on and watch them be completely tricked by either the format we're putting in front of them or putting them in the mousetrap format we're putting them in, or by the other people on the show who are going to pinpoint their trauma and make it explode in front of your eyes. And so that's like, and weirdly enough, I think there's a lot of conversations that need to be had about ethics and reality TV producing.
Sure, right.
But I think that's ultimately what it is. You're watching being like, I'm smarter. I'm sitting on this couch, chugging my Diet Coke, eating my frozen dinner or my takeout. I am in a better place than this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's exactly it.
Yeah, because Tom always says it's like the perfect housewives have to like have a level of delusion, but like the mix of like self-awareness with delusion, like it has to be 80% delusion.
100, and that's why housewives work so well, mm-hmm. because it almost feels like the perfect people to fall. The pretense of these people who are like, I'm rich, I have it all. The slogans are like, I used to not have it, but now I have it all. You then want to see these people fall because they're almost asking for it, which is why it feels a little bit more fun to watch than mm-hmm. someone who starts at the bottom and then goes below it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's true. But where I will defend the producers and everyone who cast, what I'm going to say, though, is we're casting a reality show. The word emphasized here is real. We're trying to find, I'm sure you're trying to find people who, like, you don't want to find someone who knows they're on a show. For instance, with Dragnificent, right? You're trying to go to these places, right, where, like, people are not aware of what's going on. Because if you go to like a woman who lives in Hell's Kitchen and you're like, we're going to do a drag makeover on you, it's not going to be good television because she's not going to learn anything. And she's going to just be like, oh, I actually have done drag once before. Like,
yeah, I also 100%. Like beat my face every night to go out to the club. So like,
yeah, I'm a hyper queen myself and I'd love a gig. I think it's about finding that tension, mm-hmm. right? So like the tension creates the drama that unfolds and explodes before your eyes. And I think there are good shows that do it really well. I just think that in general, like that is one of the formulas to get the product is that formula.
Yeah, because I think especially with like old reality TV, like, I mean, Flavor of Love is perfect example, mm-hmm. is these women had no clue what they were getting themselves into, literally. And they weren't coming after the show with a, like, Fabletics contract. Like, they went into the show genuinely, I would say most of them, genuinely to, like, quote-unquote fall in love. Some of them were like, I'm a model. Some of them were like, I want to mm-hmm. be famous. But the majority of the people, like, expected not to be famous after the show.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
I think that
it makes it so much better.
I think that we always go back to like rewatching old reality TV shows just because it's so fun to see people just really unleash. Like, they have not a care in the world.
Uh-huh. Well, someone that does this really well, and this is going to be a nice little transition I'm about to tee up, is Queen Dorinda.
Mm-hmm. Obsessed.
God, I love
Dorinda
her.
Was just at a, D'Agostino's on the Upper East Side and like living her life and probably screaming at someone on the phone for like mm-hmm. for like getting the wrong fixtures for Bluestone Manor. Like, it's like that has been her like before a red light went on a camera, and it continues to be her. I think that she like has let the show get to her a bit, but I actually don't think she's the worst offender of that. I think mm-hmm. she's stays pretty I'm not gonna say normal because I don't think she's normal, but
true to herself.
She's pretty true to her insanity, because like this, so the episode we're breaking down today is Roni season 7 episode 9 and then a little touch of 10, and this was Dorinda's first season. She was added to the cast. The cast has 8 women on it, which is kind of insane, but
and
also
amazing.
I'm like we should always have 8.
Yes.
Eight is what we had in Beverly Hills this past year. Actually, mm-hmm. we had 9 in Beverly Hills mm-hmm. with the addition of Kathy. Like, and
look how good it was.
Look how good it was. It always
exactly.
works.
Exactly. There has to, I think that's actually part of the equation of success.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very rarely. I think the only time it's ever worked to have like 4 or 5 was like early New Jersey when they, because they were all family.
So there was like there was, 30 there of was them one season, in turn.
No, there was the second season of New Jersey. Dina leaves like 2 episodes in. There's only 4 of them. Like that, there's only 4 cast members. You have Danielle Staub, Caroline, Jacqueline, and Teresa, and somehow they were able to crank out a dramatic season then. But like this, like 8 is insane because we have Heather and Carol who are kind of on their own little island, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have Bethany who's just been brought back to the show, and it's a bold casting choice, I think, to bring Bethany back and still bring on a new wife,
yeah,
in Dorinda. And then we also have Kristen Takeman there for some bizarre reason. Is this her first season? No, this is her second or third. This is her last one.
But it feels like a first because
she's not clicking with the group.
Not clicking.
No, she doesn't click with the crew. And then we have, you know, obviously the Ramona, Sonia, Luann.
Who will die with the show.
Literally. Oh my
God. They literally will die with the franchise.
Which is happening in 2022. It's not coming back.
Which is literally happening, yeah. But
wait, is it?
Coming in 2022, allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly they're waiting to start filming until like mid-2022.
Whoa, that's big news. And also like they needed to do something drastic because that last season was really bad.
Garbage.
It was almost unwatchable.
Mm-hmm.
It was. I mean, we were talking about it on this podcast, and every time we'd be like, okay. Just to remind you, Black Lives do matter.
And Ramona's a cunt. Yeah. Like,
no, and what I'm saying, when I say that, I mean, like, I'm like, because, like, it seems Ramona has to be reminded of that every single fucking day of the week that like, the race issue in this country is real. It's just, it's absurd that she couldn't even listen.
She does not care. She does not care.
Well, she lives in her own universe. Like everything, and you see, they talk about it a little bit on this episode, and especially right now in Ultimate Girls Trip, you're just seeing that she is like the least interesting and least important one out of all the housewives. And everyone there is like, you're annoying as fuck. Like, shut up. Like,
but the thing is, Ramona will always light a fucking match, but not produced. It's out of nowhere. And I truly believe that from a producer perspective, I think she's gold because you're like, oh, this is going to be the storyline. Just mention this at the table. Out of nowhere, Ramona will be like, you know what? I think your tablecloths look like garbage. And you'll be like, wait a second. And now there's season through line of Ramona talking about tablecloths. Like, you know what I mean?
No, you're absolutely right. I'm reading the Housewives book that just came out a couple weeks ago. Not all diamonds and rosé, and it's got to the Roni chapter, and every time like they talk, so it's essentially like interviews like with the producers and cast members, and every time they're like, and then on season three they introduced and they'll reference a new wife they brought in, and Ramona always after they explain the new wife she's like, I didn't like her. I thought she was just boring.
Like, okay, like every time
she's
off.
Like, nah, don't like her. I'm wait. Like, Ramona, like you don't have any takes on any of these people. She's like, I never understood why they cast Kristen Takeman, which maybe is the only thing I agree with Ramona on.
Wait, Mike, did you see that clip of Dolores from Jersey talking about Ramona recently?
No. What is she saying?
It was an old clip I learned.
Oh, it's old.
Big resurfaced. Yeah.
But she's dragging her, and it's fucking hilarious. We'll send
she's
it to you.
Like, she's a deplorable human being. This is like on a press junket.
She's like on Us Weekly or something like that. Like,
she's like, Ramona is a deplorable human being that doesn't deserve to be on television. What else do you want me to say?
The thing is, though, like, Ramona is like Trump, where it does not matter what you say about her. She's like a... I hate to compare a woman to a cockroach, but she kind of is because you can't kill Ramona.
You can't. I agree.
She will always fucking come back and she'll be like, oh my God, I really didn't do good there. I'm so sorry. I had a hard life. Okay, but, where's the wine? I did my cry thing. Like, it doesn't, she's like, doesn't have empathy.
Not an ounce of it.
Not a bit.
So this season, a little background, right? So Dorinda's cast, I believe... Dorinda's husband passed away like maybe 2 years prior to this or something like that. I think it's pretty recent in terms of losing a partner because they all have a lot to say about John, which is like a big point of contention in the episode.
Yeah,
it's like,
shut up about it.
No one liking John. And Kristen Takeman talks about this like bizarre interaction she had with John and they show it. And I was like disturbed by it. I was like, wait, this is really weird. Where like John was like grinding on her. He was like, oh, I love a leather skirt. And then like Dorinda gaslights Kristen into being like, it's your fault.
Well, I would say that that was one of the biggest takeaways watching this episode is it did not age well. Like after the Me Too movement, this episode is a good example of like women gaslighting other women when they are speaking up for themselves and not defending women. Like it's actually crazy to see Dorinda, who I think is really on the right side of history a lot. Like it's crazy to see someone like Dorinda being like, don't be ridiculous. Like, oh, can he touch you? Sorry. Like, let's not drag down John. He's a good guy. And I was like, this feels very like, kind of like a Trump supporting woman in like 2016 being like, mm-hmm. yeah. come on. He said it, but it was locker room talk. Like, that's what it felt like to me.
Completely felt like that. And I the way she turned, like, they're sitting on the couch and she just like flips and she's like, yeah, but do you know how uncomfortable it made me to see you coming at John like that? It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, and then later in the episode, like, Sonia's in lingerie, like, kissing John, and she's like on the couch or on the bed being like, hee hee. Like, so
it was so weird. It also was her excuse for being upset was like, I lost my husband and I'm just trying to do my best. So yes. Let me be with an abuser. Like, you know right. what I mean? Like, if I'm going to have a man, let me have a man regardless of how he makes you feel.
Bizarre. The thought process of the whole scene. So like, right. So first Kristen is telling Ramona, I was uncomfortable. I didn't like that. Dorinda gets there. She's like, are you talking about me? And they're like, yeah. Dorinda's like, here's it. And she's like, well, I'm mad at you because that hurt my feelings. And then without a beat is like, but Richard's dead.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
It was like, this has nothing to do with this conversation.
Not a bit.
But it sounds like someone who's insecure about their relationship. I don't think she ever really, I don't know what she felt with John. They are no longer together anymore. And she talks about Richard so much about like how he was like the one. And I don't know. It's just interesting to like, for her to move on with someone who is so different than this man, Richard, and also physically.
I think, like, I can relate to this from a human level because not personally, but my parents are divorced and my mm-hmm. mom had a really tumultuous divorce with my dad. And I mm-hmm. still have a good relationship with the both of them, but my mom will constantly, is very wounded from the divorce, right? And so my mom has had so many conversations where she's told me, like, your father was the one love of my life. Like, he, like, if he ever changes his mind and wants to come back to me, which is like so sad, deeply sad. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. like, at the same time, she has a partner and it's a similar situation to John where like, yeah. she just wants companionship. And she says to me things like, I mean, my mom has housewife. And I don't know if you follow me on Instagram, but like I put up reels of my mom and she yes. truly could be a housewife, but she says things like, she's like, I'm like, Ma, how's your boyfriend? She goes, do I love him? No. Is he my rock steady? Yes. I'm like, oh my God. Like, but I really think like, I think that's what Dorinda's situation.
Yeah, no, that's exactly
was.
It. Because she, I think that they were together for so long because she didn't want to be alone. Mm-hmm. And so like, it was kind of, for lack of a better term, I feel like John was like a little bit of a rebound and then just kind of like, was like, well, I don't want to be alone. And he sticks around. He doesn't stay at my place. We get to have like separate lives, but like every yeah. once in a while.
Anyone who goes off in that, like explaining a relationship in terms of the convenience of it, they're not in it for the right reasons. You know what I mean? Like, that's a clear example of like, this isn't correct.
No, absolutely.
No, I completely, no. But okay, what I will say though is we're all like younger and like, we've not experienced like what they are experiencing with like death of a partner or divorce. And I know a lot of people say divorce is like a death. Like, it's like,
my mom says it every day.
You're like, she just, we were on the phone today and she said it. But like, for our grandfather, our grandmother died and our grandfather,
we're really giving it all to the listeners today.
I mean, very quickly got engaged, like month. Mm. And which then makes your mind go wild because you're like, well, where was she before?
Mm-hmm.
Like, when? How long has this been going on? All that stuff. But I think that there is like something that happens when you're older and you have a different, like, you have a great love, mm-hmm. and then like after that, like, I think there's understandings that people are there for just different reasons. But
100%.
But for us, right, we're like, no, we need to like be with someone and like we needed it to be amazing and we needed to be great and if they ever did anything wrong, they'd be dead to me. And then I don't know, like, we just have a different mindset.
There's also like a generational conversation to be had here. Are we all millennials on this podcast?
Yeah.
Okay.
So no Gen Zers.
Let me like Lena Dunham. Let me speak for a generation. Okay.
So yeah, please.
I think we as millennials, we are idealistic, right? Uh-huh. We want to assume the best in everyone and the best intentions, but only through the lens of our lived experience. Mm-hmm. And so when we look at people like my mom or like Dorinda, we think like, sweetie, like you should go out and find a man who like loves you for you and who like
can be a girl boss.
Yeah, like, 'cause you deserve the world. But actually, her lived experience might have taught her in that moment that the best thing for me is like a safety blanket. And that's actually like survival. So in a way, you can't really fault someone for doing something that we wouldn't do. It's like, that's what's best for her. And also like, I'm saying this because I've had so much therapy about like my mom and these issues. And like, what's best for my, maybe I'm projecting, but what's best for my mom is like having someone she calls her fucking rock steady.
Yeah. Like,
and maybe that's a word for Dorinda.
Yeah.
Although we did see it kind of end, but like maybe it ran its kind of natural course.
Yeah.
So I'm very like forgiving, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
I mean, forgiving of their relationship, but not John.
Not the assault.
Yes, exactly that. I just wanted to reiterate.
Well, okay, but now we just like defended Dorinda's relationship, but like mindset, someone who is in her same generation who has the absolute opposite mindset is Ramona. Ramona does not have she does not know how to just be in like a relationship again. Like she can't find it.
Well, I mean, and she talks about to Avery later when they come home from the Berkshires that like if what Mario would like want to get back together, she would, which is just so, I mean, again, I can't judge people's relationships, but I couldn't be me. So
100%. I mean, I also think she was in a place where she wasn't like fully over or through onto the other side of her divorce.
Absolutely.
No, it's fresh. And what Mario did was dark. Like,
wait, can you refresh my memory? I don't remember exactly what he did.
Yeah, he had a mistress for a while, and supposedly the whole Upper East Side knew, and Ramona didn't know. She like did a last minute trip to the Hamptons, and she walked into the Hamptons home, and he was literally inside of her on the kitchen counter.
Oh my! How has she ever talked about this?
Yeah. In her book, The Ramona Poster. No, but she hasn't talked about it on the show.
Not on the show. She did talk about it on the show. Oh.
Like, not in this season, but I'm saying she's been open about, like, how it all went down. I think it might have been at a reunion or something like that. But, yeah, she's talked about it. But
yeah, it's pretty brutal.
Vicky is the first, but one of the culprits of the vow renewal, and then a year or so later... getting divorced. So.
Maybe a vow renewal is just like a red flag.
It is the Twitter red flag tweet, you know?
Yeah, the thing that's going around right now.
So in this episode, we also...
Just going to say I want to unpack this dinner.
Oh, but wait, before we get to dinner, though, we do need to chat about... We get the, like, origins of the Berkshire... Like, the origins of Bluestone Manor in this episode.
And I loved this. I loved this so much.
Loved it, too.
The moment... Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. The moment of what?
Well, the moment that Carol is basically in the foyer, right, of now known Bluestone Manor, and she's saying to Ramona, she goes, you know, I think that Dorinda should call this Bluestone Manor. There's all this blue stone out there. There's like hints of blue and all these things, and it's like a manor. And Ramona's like, Yeah, that's a good idea.
That's my
idea. Hey, Dorinda. And it's literally like watching a 5-year-old. And then what was so crazy to me, because this could never happen in Carol's last season. Carol starts to, I think, walk up. Ramona grabs her, like the back of her sweater, pulls the sweater. And then there's an interview line from Ramona where Ramona's like, she's just so thin. She weighs nothing. And pulling her is nothing. And then she's like pulling her down the stairs. And then eventually Ramona like drops it at the dinner. But she's like, you should name it Bluestone Manor, which is what it is called. I just think that's so fucking crazy. It was crazy.
And I got chills like I was watching like the beginning of like the Marvel, the MCU or something like that. Like hearing her be like, Blue Stone Bluestone Manor. I'm like, this is where it all began. I mean, and this is where the crazy began too.
It's really like the Berkshires is really where, like, I've said this before, I've had to have that it, everything explodes in the Berkshires and has mm-hmm. come with the most like iconic reality TV moments of like this era of TV we're watching. I mean, like Mention It All, this Make It Nice, all those like Roni quips are always in the Berkshires. It's just such a joy to like watch.
It feels origin. Like a place for them to really get messy. Like, yeah. I think they tried to do that with the Salem trip in this past season. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they tried to be like, we'll have the same energy as of the Berkshires. But there's something about the Berkshires where it's not the Hamptons, right? And it's like somewhere in between where the women just really are niche. Like, let's go. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's, I mean, Heather, right? Heather was saying that she has a house around the corner or something like that. Yes. Or she grew up around the corner. So, but I would say like, I don't know. No one talks really about going to the Berkshires. You talk about going to the shore or going to the Hamptons or upstate, but I guess Berkshires is upstate. But anyway.
Because they have to stay in that house too, is another big part of it.
Yeah. Like, oh, at least that's in the Hamptons,
you know, Ramona can be like, oh, I'm actually going on a date later in Southampton or whatever. But like, they have to stay in that manor.
Right. And it's like they don't stay in hotels. Like, exactly. Luann tries in like a later season, but like, they all stay there, which is not something that really like happens. I don't know. I feel like that wouldn't happen.
No talk of the
anymore.
Fish room.
Yeah.
The fact that the fish room was a thing and people stayed in it and didn't care, but then they made it a storyline in seasons after is actually genius to me.
They did so sprinkle funny. In a little bit, like Luann's like, oh, and then they like pan to like the shark's mouth. Like, wait, before we get to the dinner, the first night, like some of the women get there and they go to the Red Lion Inn to get dinner. This like little bistro and
Heather
in
got
Great
engaged
Barrington.
There.
Heather got engaged there.
Yes.
And we get a hilarious Luann moment that I forgot about. And they were talking about, like, Dorinda's like, I think I might get the raven or something on the menu.
Yeah.
And they were talking about how gross that is to order raven. And then Luann goes, you know, it's like a blackbird. Like, she's speaking like
Italian,
in Italian.
All of a sudden about a fucking raven in
and
the
Heather
Berkshires?
Looks at her, she's like, the blackbird?
It is so good. That is honestly why I miss Heather for moments like that, where she's like, she gives you the reality that Bethany gives you, where she brings you back down to reality, but in a way that's not as cutting as Bethany,
right,
and
it's
more
much
of like
nicer.
Inclusive, like black a bird. What are you, Amina?
Yeah. I was waiting for a joke after it. But the big storyline here is that Bethany is not there because she doesn't want to leave Bryn alone, which I can't. Her divorce situation is a whole nother.
So
we don't
dark.
Have enough time to dive into that. But
also the fact that she can now post her daughter
is amazing.
Mm-hmm. And now it's amazing. But also she posts so much. I'm like, it feels like a Instagay where like he was unable to take his shirt off. And now he's like, it's off in every post.
That's exactly.
It's like,
it
yeah,
is.
It's the people who like wear bikinis like in the snow just so you can see their body. It's like, see, I'm thin.
Right. But yeah, so she surprises everyone by coming there right before dinner, but with in the true Bethany fashion of being like, I had to get a hotel for this, I had to get a sitter, I had to get this, I had to that look
Bryn's,
at how much
I
I've done
for you.
I had
to plan, Bryn's asleep. Like, it's like, okay.
Like,
yeah, I moved like, mountains to be here for your birthday that I was invited to and supposed to come anyway. You know what
right.
I mean? Like,
exactly.
No,
that's
for
such
the reality
a great point.
Show that you're, yeah, that you're getting paid for. It's not for Dorinda's birthday.
And yeah, you didn't have to drive. A producer drove you or picked you up from the train. Like, come on.
It's like, yeah, let's relax here. It's truly like this happened, of course. You should have been here. It would have been crazy if you didn't go. Like, crazy. That's the reality of the situation. But I think in her coming, I thought it was interesting that she just kind of arrived and was like, I'm here. Like,
yeah, she just in, like, she's like walked hey. In. It's like, hey,
surprise.
Yeah,
she's such a fucking martyr. She's like, look at me, I did something. Like,
I'm
I
here.
Did something. Anyone want to say something about
it? But
it
does it's honestly, like, it does remind me how iconic she is as a housewife.
I mean, we miss her so much. She is amazing television. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch her HBO Max show.
I sadly did. Do you want to? Yeah, do you have any questions?
Was it bad?
So she So here's the thing about Bethany that is so interesting to me. Bethany, I think, is when cameras are down, she shuts down and she doesn't know how to function. She's getting into like Twitter fights, like about who knows what now, because like she doesn't. Yeah, because she doesn't know how to, like, she's losing her mind that there's not a camera in her face. So, but when that red light goes on, she's literally, the, I think, the best version of herself and, like, the mm-hmm. most genuine version of herself. Mm-hmm. So we get a bit of that, which is nice, because she's very just, like, she's really great with all these to-be interns or whatever we want to call them. She says that she's casting a, she's looking for a director of operations. I'm like, that's, like, a big job that you wouldn't do on a reality show, really. I mean, like... But
100%.
The thing that was craziest about the show is she does not, she's clearly the EP on the show. She's not listening to anyone. There's no rules. So like one episode, there was like 10 people to start. The first episode, she sends 5 home. So the second episode, there's only 5. And you're like, wait, how many episodes long is the show? And then like that episode, she sends like 2 people home. And then you're like, wait, there's how many more episodes do we have? And then she brings back, she's like, I found this guy in the street. I heard he's great, and brings this guy in, and then she sends him home immediately. And then like it's just there's no rules to it. And so essentially the three people that she like lands on in episode 2 end up still being the 3 people in the finale. It's like you don't get how this show works. Like send one home, keep going. There's drama. So she didn't have a good grasp on it, but she's great on TV. I mean, she's hilarious. She like. Cries constantly somehow. She's like always crying.
I really connect though, like, with her emotional energy because she's either like on or she's sobbing. And that's kind of how I live my life.
Well, Carol says she's either wound tighter than something and or she's crying.
I mean, I thought that this dinner was really uncomfortable to watch because you see Bethany, right? She's clearly talking over the conversation that's happening. I do think like, I know Heather has her like issues, but like, I feel like Heather to me was being so gracious and like asking questions to people at the table and including the guys. And then Bethany's talking over it. So then Heather's like checking in instead of being like, shut the fuck up, Bethany, which is what she should have said. Right. She was like digging in to be like, I bet there's a reason why Bethany is like, is distancing herself. And so her checking in made Bethany get so like wound tight because she was digging at like, hey, emotionally, is there something going on with you which is making you detached right now? And Bethany knew that there was, but she was just being like, stop it, leave me alone.
Right, because she's like simultaneously doesn't want any attention, but wants everyone to look at her at the same time. She's like, you can't have don't look at me, but don't look at me and don't give me attention. But if you don't, I'm going to be mad.
Yeah, that,
and
that
Dorinda and I share a lot. I sometimes like I see myself in her in certain moments, and when she was sitting at the head of the table and Bethany's like, I can only eat shellfish, like I can't eat sushi, like I'm allergic to fish, and Dorinda's like with not even trying to be petty, she just is like, well, I didn't think you were coming. Like you told me you weren't coming, so I served fish. And it's like, right, of course, like I like, of course. What am I supposed to do? Like I can't like just change the whole meal for you. And she's, and not that she's asking for her to do that, but like she says it so matter of factly. It just reminded me of like times
she's
when
like,
I'm
you can eat edamame the whole time.
Yeah. Well, I think that's like, actually, well, you didn't tell you were gonna come.
You're bringing up a good reason why I think Dorinda lasted so long and was such an iconic housewife, because most all of those women cater to Bethany, even mm-hmm. if especially a first season like diva would have mm-hmm. absolutely been like, let me go in the kitchen. Like you have to please Bethany.
Well,
she
that's what Heather tried to
middle.
Do.
That's what Heather did. Yeah. And you can't, I think on that show, in order to be a lasting character, you have to give zero fucks about anyone but yourself.
Absolutely.
1000%. It's only what works.
Dorinda is full, like one eye closed, like half asleep, drunk at this dinner. She's like,
She's they like, have, I don't care.
Watching this episode, I'm like, they have all aged so fucking well. They all look the same.
Well, so I took notes because I'm a psychopath. And one, my first note was like, Ramona looks 10 years older in this, and this was 12 years ago. It's like, what the? Ramona looks 10 years younger now than she did in this episode.
It's literally money in like better makeup, I think. Also, better fashions. This like was a weird time, and it was like teetering post 90s, early 2000s fashions, and then kind of, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I think. I think early 2000s fashions like are bad, but they were such a choice. But I think when we get into like the 2009 to like 15, we were all doing who knows
who
what.
Knows
there wasn't
what.
Really like a
I wore
style.
Belts over like a polo.
But that was more yeah. before that. Like mm-hmm. it's like I feel like we were doing like bizarre things, bizarre choices. Like no, you look at all of them and you're like, what is everyone dressed for?
We had no identity. I think fashion-wise, we had no identity. We were in between fashions.
Bethany actually makes a comment about it. She's like, Luann looks like she's like at like a murder mystery party. Like, what's happening? She's like wearing all these long gloves and stuff. And
she
fun
says
fact,
something about, she's like, she says something about like everyone being at a different place.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. No, fun fact, that outfit, head to toe, is Luann's promo photo from season 7 of Real Housewives of New York City.
Wow.
That's
yeah,
budget,
go look at it. It's like, the promo shot is one of my favorites. It's them like at a subway station and they're all like standing waiting for the subway. And she's wearing this dress, which I'm like, what a bold choice to wear. Because I'm like, it really does look like a costume. Like no one wears gloves like that.
And the earrings were like, it really is like a drag
costume
outfit.
Jewelry.
No, but
yeah.
This is like the age of Luann where she was like, honing so hard into being a countess that it's the only mm-hmm. thing that she was talking about in her only personality trait. So she was like, here's me in white gloves coming to dinner. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this countess.
Elegance is learned.
Yeah. Yeah.
Elegance is learned, my friend.
My friend. Okay, another thing I wanted to bring up is the epic flashback of Ramona and Bethany walking across the Brooklyn Bridge.
So
never forget it.
Ramona says, and also like Ramona is literally full of shit, like full of shit, but sometimes she drops stuff and it's just the fucking truth, unfortunately. And so she says,
right.
She says, you have no girlfriends. All you have is Jason and you'll probably fuck that up too. And literally I was like, oh, this is the soothsayer of the franchise.
Oh my God. It's so brutal. Could you imagine someone saying that to you?
Like saying that.
It's but also, sick.
I fucked that up too.
Yeah, Ramona is
what's
literally sick
but
in the head.
What's so genius about that scene, though, is they're trapped on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Which is
no car.
March.
They're walking. So, like, they don't have an out. Like, they're like, what? Like, if they were at, like, a bar, Bethany would just be like, fuck you, and then get in a car
and
head home.
Which we see later on episode 10. Yeah. She literally leaves after she's uncomfortable.
I mean, can you imagine, like, a moment like this with, like, season one, what's her psycho fit? Kelly Ben Simone, like, I am here and you are here, was, like, definitely offensive, but in a way it was kind of like, it could have been in, like, a season of Sex and the City, right? Like,
sure.
This is, like, upper echelon New York, how we talk to one another.
Yeah, that's what, like, high school bullies say to people. Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's, like, it's ridiculous. But the fact that Ramona said, you have no girlfriends, you have one man in your life, and you will probably fuck that up, too, is so harsh.
I don't know how they came back from that. I mean, they don't really, I guess.
Well, they just keep walking.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, emotionally, like, in their life. Not, like, physically.
Oh. and Ramona in that season is Bethany's, like, number one girl.
Yes.
She's, like, there to defend her against Jill and all this stuff. And so, not to derail from this episode, but back to the Housewives book, Kelly Ben Simone is interviewed in it.
Jesus
and
fuck.
She's just as delusional as she was back then.
I mean, you've seen her TikToks.
Yes, the TikToks are a mess. But she's talking about... you got to see them, Mike. They're awful. Yeah,
I can't wait. I'm obsessed.
Well, she's talking about Scary Island as if she still believes that, like, production did all these things, like... that she was normal, everyone was crazy. Like, and the producers are there being interviewed too, being like, it's still the scariest thing that's ever happened to me in television production.
And Gwyneth Paltrow reading her this so many years later about like, I
yes,
don't know who
so
the
good.
Fuck that is.
Did you see that, Mike? So she brings
yes.
up.
Yes,
yeah,
I did.
Yeah, and then Gwyneth was like, I don't know her.
That
my
is
friend
so
Gwen.
Crazy.
My
I mean,
friend
yeah.
Gwyneth.
My friend Gwyneth.
Yeah.
Who? Paltrow?
You know, Paltrow.
It's so like, did she pick it out of air? I wonder, like, did she just say Gwyneth, like, improvised it and was like, Paltrow? You know what I mean?
It's the only time that Gwyneth Paltrow and Al Sharpton have shared a sentence together, probably too. Because right after that is when she's like, Al Sharpton.
Oh my God, what a mess. This is, I mean, all of this wait. To say Roni's the best franchise we have.
Oh, for sure.
Oh,
I mean,
it's the best.
OG, but like, I
yeah,
think.
Sure.
I just got into Beverly Hills this season because my fiance watched it like religiously, and I was literally like, this is the best season of TV I've ever seen.
It was amazing.
Hate Beverly Hills 80% of the time, and I was so captivated by this season.
I do think it's a chemistry thing, right? It's okay. So I'm gonna make an improv reference, and I apologize, but
it's okay. I did improv stuff.
So I think that putting together a good improv team is literally all about chemistry. And sometimes you can take the funniest 8 people and it's a horrible improv team. Sometimes you you pick a wild card, a really funny person, a couple people that are like fine improvisers, and it's a genius improv team. And it's the way people trigger one another or support one another. But in reality TV, how they trigger one another.
No, that's great. No, you're absolutely right. And because for instance, the reason, I think New York worked really well. So I think this season is really, really good. I think they get really, really in the groove of it starting season 8 because they stick with this core group for a while. And you're right. Everyone has kind of their ups and downs. But then for instance, on Atlanta, season 10 or 11, they cast truly every woman you would ever want to be together. It was Sheree, Nene, Kim Zolciak, Kenya, Cynthia, Portia. It was all of the women the you love stars, about yeah. Atlanta. The season was so boring because they're all not they're all out of 10. They're up here when we need some people down here.
Right. They're all ENFPs and you need some ENFJs in there.
I think that Tom doesn't get that reference, but I do. Myers-Briggs.
No, I think I know what it is.
To be honest, I don't know what that exact thing is, but I know the acronym.
Empathy, sure.
But doesn't P mean passive?
Probably.
Yes, but it's not it's not.
What does
like,
J mean? What does the J stand for?
Judge.
It's an acronym.
It's judging.
ENFJ.
Oh god.
Anyways, I think. But on that improv note, I do think that's why this season and you're saying the season after of Roni works so well, because we have Carol, who is really neutral. Mm-hmm. And then we have Heather, who's fun and quirky, but not really stirring the pot. And then that girl, I can't remember her name, Kristen.
Kristen.
Who's I couldn't remember her name either.
Wait, something we have to talk about Kristen, which we didn't talk about a couple things about her that didn't happen in this episode. One, she created a nail color line called POC. Pop of color.
It's insane. POC, pop of color.
It makes me laugh so
Talk about
hard.
A show that doesn't age well.
POC.
Of course a white woman would be like, I'm going to name a nail polish POC.
Also so to think that someone would also on the other side of it be like, we need more POC representation, more pops of color in the room. It's just so offensive.
And not also her storyline, not her storyline being the fact that Bethany was like, you should trademark it. And she's like, how dare you?
Yeah, I know that. I didn't watch the rest of 10 when they got to that dinner. But is 10 where they have that POC launch thing and
no.
He's like, what is this?
They're sitting at a bar. Kristen is like, I'm upset that you came at me so quickly about getting my pop of color trademarked. But he's like, I'm just going to leave. I don't want to have this conversation. And she leaves the bar.
Well, a couple other things about Kristen. One, her husband was one of the main, I don't want to say victims, but people that were outed in the Ashley Madison scandal.
Oh, really?
Not a victim.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's funny. I saw that one shot of him getting out of the car, right? They were her husband's here. And I was like, something's up with him. He was wearing a fedora, I think. Right.
Something's always up with the fedora.
That's something that came and went, and that's the middle ground of fashion that y'all are talking about.
I love that you're excusing him, but still, he was still wearing a fedora. Yes, it was a thing, but Jason Mraz was wearing it, but so was he in this episode.
I honestly think Tom bought me a fedora once.
Absolutely not.
No, I'm not shitting you, Tom.
I have hats, but I don't have a fedora. I'm a person who owns and wears hats.
I wear hats all
Tom
the time.
Tom likes that too.
I love hats.
He has a brunch hat that is literally, he puts it on and becomes a different person. It's
I love it.
It's a flat brim hat. I put it on. I become a monster.
And you know what? Same. I do too.
With a mimosa in my hand. Yeah. And then last thing about Kristen, I've met Kristen and Josh because Josh was a head investor at like the old spin studio I taught at. And they would like come to class all the time. And I like watched her kids like in the lobby while she was in a class.
Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah. And he founded eBoost. Have you ever seen eBoost anywhere? It's like they're still like out there. It's like a little, it's like an emergency. Like it looks like that, but it's kind of,
I think I have seen that. Yeah.
It's like a pre-workout almost, but like not, it's one down from a pre-workout.
Is it
like,
gel?
No. It's powder that you just put into your water. It tastes awful. Oh, but those are my Kristen Takeman connections there.
Yeah. She very much was like one of those like middle of the road people, but like you could tell she was like being produced to be like, you're the next Bethany, because she had that line that was like, there's another person who started small. And then she like made a joke that was like, clearly a producer was like, this is funny. And she was like, okay.
And now like Bethany is literally swimming in cash and
a bajillionaire. Yeah.
I do. Oh, another thing about Kristen that makes her interesting is that her best friend in the entire world, she was the maid of honor in her wedding, Brandi Glanville.
What?
What the fuck?
There is a scene in this season where Brandi and Yolanda come and have lunch with Kristen and Carol, I think. I can never picture Brandi Glanville and Kristen like in a room together. Like they don't go.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
Yeah. Well,
I feel like everything and nothing happened in this episode.
Well, I was gonna say, feel like we talked about everything and nothing, but I guess we didn't really talk about Peter from AOA. They had like
not AOL. They were like, are you
Botox in his forehead?
Are you from AOL?
Are you AOL?
Also, the way they tried. Okay, so Ramona always like. What's interesting to me about Ramona, many things are interesting, but this is really interesting to me that she started to feel her kind of single groove during this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think she was like, oh, we're business partners. But clearly, as soon as everyone else thought he was attractive, then Ramona was like, no, I want to fuck him.
I mean, did you notice that?
That's her MO. Yeah.
He's like, I actually want to win. It's not about like finding love. It's about winning.
And he's not attractive. Can we just all agree on that?
Yeah, they tried to set him up as like a hottie with all those shots of like, ooh, ooh, ooh. And I was like, are they looking at the right person?
Yeah, he looks like
vampire.
Tight. Like everything's just really tight. Like
His hair.
Forehead's tight. The hair is taut. Like it's all just really, like you said earlier, tension.
That's the tension. Tension.
That's the tension. 100%.
Well, any final thoughts? Any final thoughts on the Berkshires, Mike?
I guess one other thing. This we've talked so much about Ramona. You know, I just feel like we've really like dissected Ramona. One thing I will say about Ramona is that she made me laugh so much when she was entering the store in town. I think it was called like. It was called like ding-a-lings or something. And Ramona goes ding-a-lings. I guess we're going to ding-a-lings. Like, she just says these things. They come out of her mouth and they are very funny. Like very, very, very funny. So I think I want to take a moment to say Ramona makes me laugh so much sometimes.
She really does.
God, she's fucking annoying. But yes. Yeah.
She did a toast too when they were at the Red Lion Inn. We didn't talk about, there's so many things. Heather comparing her nanny leaving to like Bethany's father and dying and her divorce.
Insane.
And then Ramona.
It's the most unrelatable thing I've ever heard, like someone say, honestly.
Right. But then Ramona says to Carol and Dorinda's face, who are both talking about how they've lost partners, she's like, you know what? It's going to be okay. And Dorinda's like, it's not. Like, he's dead.
He's
gone. It's not okay. Like, it's never going to be okay. I thought that was just like, I like seeing Carol and Dorinda bond over that. Like, that's such like a bizarre commonality to have with someone on a show like this.
Didn't they end up going on a trip together to London?
This season they go to London together to like visit Carol's ex-husband's ashes, or she has to take the ashes because the church that they were at is being taken was being like demolished. Mm. So she needed to take the ashes back to the States. Fuck. Yeah, and Dorinda goes with her, and it's like this beautiful, like bizarrely beautiful moment of reality television.
Two women connecting about their past husbands in like a really nice, earnest way. Yeah, yeah. That's, I remember that being like a sweet moment back in the day.
Yeah. Well, something spooky about Dorinda and Richard, or not spooky, but haunting, is that balloon. Are you familiar with the balloon? Do you remember that?
No, I think maybe tell me more.
There was like a helium balloon that was like after a party that just like stayed in the house. Like just like float from room to room, and she talks about how she thought it was Richard.
So horrifying.
I love that so much. I mean, because as a person like, who like moved into our apartment and like there was a fly like all day and like was on my sandwich and then was like in the bedroom, I was like my grandpa's here, so like I really can't judge. If she thought he was a balloon, then he was a balloon, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Whatever floats your boat.
Whatever, yeah, floats your balloon. Alright, I gotta go. Bye.
And on that, well, Mike, thank you so much for being here. This was so fun. We really covered everything and nothing and got kind of really deep and then not and all the stuff.
I loved it. I really, thanks for having me. I also, it's impossible for me to not get deep. It's like in my DNA, like if we talk, we have to get into some real stuff. And I
get that.
Love I love it. That. Mm-hmm. I think we often go places like that too.
Yeah.
And it's like it's easy for us to like, I think it's something here we go. We're about to get deep again. It's something with our family. I think that's like super, we were taught that it's like okay to access
those emotions.
Mm-hmm. Like, very healthy.
And it's not like, it's not something to like, no one in our family holds on to things, you know, like we're very like address things as they go. And if you're feeling, if something's on top of mind, it's like, why not talk about it?
That's beautiful. Not what I would expect from two CPAs.
they're going to love hearing this, the CPA slander.
Say it, forget it, write it, regret it. Okay.
There we go.
Honestly, Andrew says that all the fucking time. He's like on the phone talking to coworkers, talking shit, and he'll hang up and go, say it, forget it, write it, regret it.
That's
why I do voice
notes
something
now. Oh, really? That's smart.
Because then they go away.
I have a coworker that does voice notes, and I was like, I'm like, dude, you have to start writing this, though, because I'm like, I need to, like
it is, he,
like,
it is annoying,
voice
but,
note
yeah.
me about, like, because I help manage talent for a fitness app, NeoU, and sometimes I'm like, no, like, you gotta, like, write it out, because, like,
yeah,
we gotta,
like a
track
company.
The communication.
Yeah.
We're a company here.
I need, like, a receipt when I forget what we talked about or need to refer, like, yeah.
Yeah, but
with
I mean,
screenshot
good,
culture, you gotta,
luck,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
true. Good luck getting that in writing. Sometimes they're like, you know, hey, I'm talent, I'm having fun, I gotta go.
Yo, I'm sure you know.
I mean, yeah, dealing with talent in this entertainment industry is really crazy. It's really, really crazy.
I don't know how you do it. Well, Mike, let everyone know where they can follow you and all that stuff.
You can find me on this thing called Instagram.
That's right.
Yes, I've heard of it.
It's just my name, at Mike Kelton. I also have, as you heard before, my podcast. I'm working on a season 3 right now.
Oh, that's exciting.
It's taking a long time because we're trying to get it to a distributor to get it out to more people. So that we're in the process of kind of doing that now. But it's called Beyond with Mike Kelton. And if you're at all like into any of the spiritual or astrology stuff, check it out. And you can like, you can binge. I feel okay saying you can binge it, because like, I do think you can binge it if you want to.
Yeah, it's there.
Yeah.
And it's like nice, concise seasons. Mm-hmm. So you can totally do it. Great.
Undoping.
Yeah. And rate, review, and subscribe to Beyond, even though it came out a couple years ago.
Yeah, drop me a review. I love getting those little notifications. It's like, okay, bitch, what are you saying?
You're a couple years late.
Yeah.
And you can follow me at TheAtomHamlet, and you can follow Kix.
At KixHamlet, that's spelled C-I-X.
Yep, and then the podcast, Dumpster Dive Pod. And then next week, next Monday, we will be covering the next season of Roni Berkshires, which is season 8, episodes 9 and 10 again, I think, actually, weirdly. And it is the iconic I Made It Nice fight.
I did it
and
nice.
And the iconic
she actually
you fuck
says
everyone.
I did it nice.
No, she says I did it, and then she says I made it. She says them both.
Oh, fuck.
I did it nice.
I did it nice. With the Grey Goose bottle in her hand.
Yeah. I'm obsessed.
So good. But Mike, say bye to everyone listening. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.